Hey, hi, welcome everybody. I wanted to start first by asking if there are any announcements. No announcements? Okay, well, then...
Can you hear me?
Yes, I can hear you now. Were you trying to...
This is Karen. I had another suggestion for a presentation that I emailed to everybody. I don't know if you've had a chance to take a quick look at it. But there was a wonderful segment on NPR yesterday afternoon by the new person at CDC who's responsible for climate change and health impacts. And he was talking about the science behind the health impacts of climate change. And I thought it would be useful for all of us to hear a presentation by him. I don't know what the rest of you think, but it's an idea.
It's a great idea.
That sounds good. It's a great idea. It actually might have some relevance to the conversation we're going to have today. So thanks. Yes, I did see that you sent that, but I had not got a chance to listen to it yet. Okay. So if we don't have any other announcements, we'll go on to our presentation today. Martha Shaw is the creative director and founder of Earth Advertising at eFlix Media Production Studio and has been involved in various kinds of communications around various kinds of products and activities around the world, and she can probably describe it much better than I can. And she's been involved in the Climate Literacy Network now for at least on the order of a year, Martha. I'm not really exactly sure when you joined our conversation, but has been providing us input on how we might think about this further, and it is now come to the point where we've always known we can benefit from Martha's input, but we've just sort of trying to get our head around how to do that, and she's going to help us along that path a little bit further today. Her slides are on the Climate Network website. The title is How to Get Messages into the Masses. And so, Martha, I'm going to turn it over to you, and hopefully everybody has the slides.
Yeah, I think that if we could open CLN presentation Shaw 2, the PDF file will be fine. You don't really need to open the PowerPoint. The one version number 2 just has a little change on page 42, so if you could open that one.
Okay.
How many people are on the call?
Let's see. I can tell you that it looks like we have 11 at the current time.
Okay, great. Has everybody opened the PDF file, Shaw 2? CLN.
I opened the PowerPoint.
But either way, it's fine.
Okay.
Sometimes they don't translate between computers. So we go to the first page. We're going to first do a little exercise to make the point because we're talking about messaging for CLN in the end, but we wanted to maybe set the tone. So the first slide is asking everybody to count to 10, and it goes through page 6 where you count to 10. So the first thing we're going to do is just count to 10 and just acclimate ourselves to what 10 seconds is. So I'm going to start now. Go. I don't have my second timer on. Okay, so that's about 10 seconds. So now the question would be, if you had 10 seconds in the news or at a party, what would you say to somebody to convince him and her about climate change from your point of view? And I'm suggesting that you talk into your recorder and say what you think you could, how you could convince that person of your argument in 10 seconds. And using that 10 seconds now to talk into your memo, you could record it, or it might be something that you do, you know, when you're driving, just to keep getting this elevator speech down, because I think all of the members of this community really need to have an elevator speech. And what would even be stronger is if our elevator speech was somewhat the same. So it then you start a people's campaign. So this exercise is to just, you know, it may sound a little corny, but just try it for 10 seconds. You can talk to this person on slide 4, who's probably not listening, or to the guy on slide 5. Okay, so in general in media, that's more than the attention span of most people for extraneous information, unless, you know, there's a fire or, you know, something big. The attention span is generally thought of for extraneous information to be probably less than 10 seconds. And this is why slide 8. And that's why mass media resorts to sensationalism. And this is the cover of CNN today's website. And the reason why CNN resorts to sensationalism is because they sell their advertising according to eyeballs. So there's a reason why the news does sensationalism. If you just, so I think they're always looking for stories that will keep somebody on the page long enough to see the ad on the page. It's also the fact that we have such a low attention span is also why major brands spend millions to develop the messaging long before they ever do the campaign. So in this presentation, we're not going to talk about media methods. We're not going to talk about TV versus radio versus Facebook and all that. We're only talking about messaging. So before they spend all their money on, and I've been in a creative director at Saatchi & Saatchi, and I've been on very big brands. I've been, you know, embarrassingly on... been on McDonald's, I've been on a launch of Lexus automobiles before I started Earth Advertising, and then I started launching, you know, Zipcar, Stonyfield Farm, Green Dry Cleaners, and different things like that, socially responsible investment companies and all. But so before these big ad agencies spend, you know, $30, $100 million on the TV, radio, print, internet, packaging, point of sale, which is what you see when you're shopping, media sponsorships, of races and events, coupons, signage, games. They start with the creative brief. And that's what this presentation is about. Does anybody have any questions?
I'm assuming you're going to define the creative brief for us.
Excuse me? Yeah, we are. That's what will happen next.
Okay, but
so that's what this is all about.
But one question I had from the earlier part, you said that people have... 10 seconds is longer than people have for extraneous information. Is there a definition of extraneous information, or is that something that's defined by each individual person as to what extraneous?
I think it's defined by each individual person. But I call extraneous, for instance, if I don't care about different roofs are made, but somebody who's a builder might care about how roofs are made. I might care about the dangers of sun exposure, and somebody else might not. So I'm calling it extraneous because it's not life or death. It's not going to affect your quality of life immediately. But that's a very good question to define what that is. But usually people are mostly, you know, like, for instance, CNN. If they're talking about terrorism, well, that does affect us, isn't it? Doesn't it? We're worried about, you know, getting bombed and killed and all that. So I would call that not extraneous. So I'm going to just use Cheerios. It's not a account I worked on, but I just decided to pick the very simplest thing we could think of to define a creative brief. So we're using Cheerios just to explore the creative brief approach to messaging. So I'm using this notepad because this is what we do before we even start thinking about creativity or, you know, is it a dog or a cat or a monkey? Is it a radio? Is it a TV spot? Is it an internet campaign? We just start with this creative brief for the messaging. And so the first question we ask is, what is the single most important objective of our communications? So again, using Cheerios as an example, well, it's to sell more Cheerios. And, you know, sometimes you might sit in an ad agency for 2 weeks before they might go around and around before they come back to, yeah, we have to sell more Cheerios or we're going to get fired. You know, you might, you can find a lot of side conversations around it. No, we're just selling on, you know, kids on, you know, them as toys or everything. But it's basically, what's the end game? Sell more Cheerios. So who is your most important audience for that? Well, young moms. The moms ages 24 to 40 hold the most purchasing power than any other demographic. So that's where the money's spent. What's the most important audience benefit to Cheerios? Well, their children's health and wellness. Why should they believe this? Well, then they get the doctors involved, and the doctors prefer multigrain, and then they push multigrain. That's what they've been pushing. What's the biggest obstacle? Well, the kids, you know, what they like to eat. I've worked on a lot of products where, you know, the mothers know the kids are in the grocery cart and they're responding to the cartoons on the back of the packaging and all. So you really have to also get past the kids. So what's the most important message? Well, kids love Cheerios, and there's their package, which also has a double play on heart health.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. What do we want the audience to do? We want them to emotionally attach to the Cheerios. So you'll see that Cheerios has all these programs like Cheerios Spoonfuls of Stories, Nurture a Love of Reading, you know, Real Moms Share Why Their Kids Love Cheerios, and all these websites about, you know, moms can eat Cheerios too, and love your body, love your baby. And so that's what Cheerios does. Now, how will they know if their Cheerios campaigns are working? Well, it's easy for them. The sales figures and brand loyalty. They don't want somebody to switch over to another multigrain cereal. So that's basically how a creative brief works. It's really simple. So I just, a couple campaigns, I just put an example of how a creative brief gets executed upon with creative in the end. So, you know, here's a Zipcar creative brief. What was the single most important objective to our communication? Well, we wanted to get people to think that they might not have to own a car after all. You know, who's the audience? Well, they're city people with cars who walk to work. Now, preferably they don't have a paid parking. You know, what's the most important benefit? Well, no hassle in the expense of the car. Why should they believe this? Well, because now you can rent them by the hour. What's the biggest obstacle? Well, no one really understood the concept. So you can see that a lot of the work we did, we've had those four steps, reserved by the hour, cars nearby, unlock, drive off. So they just got the idea. That was our biggest obstacle in all the focus groups. Nobody really understood. Do you have to return to the same place? You know, where do you find it? You know, blah, blah, blah. So the concept. So a lot of our early communications, we had to explain the concept. What was the most important message? Wheels when you want them. What do we want the audience to do? Go to the, you know, type. We developed something where you could type in your zip code, and then you could see them in your neighborhood, and that seemed to be what compelled people the most to sign up, because they had to know if they were, they had to kind of go, oh, it's in that, right in that parking garage I pass every day. So you get the idea. You know, here's another Stonyfield Farm one. What's the single most important objective? Well, that organic is healthier for people and planet. And then Stonyfield had to go start the OTA, and the Organic Trade Association got started by founders of organic companies because they needed to also validate the concept of organic. The same shopper is the mom. The benefit is health. Why should they believe this? Because healthy cows make healthy milk. The obstacle is that we have confidence in our food system. You know, we don't think we could, we're really at risk. And that's a very difficult thing to overcome. The most important message, no hormones, antibiotics, and pesticides. And what do we want them to do? Try it. So we had this big coupon program where they could go try them, you know, really inexpensively and then report back. And how do you know your successful sales? So but you can see that the executions become creative and grabbing them. They take 10 seconds to grab them. So now that we got that concept of the creative brief, I thought that together we might try a creative brief for the Climate Literacy Network. And this is just the beginning. We've had some conversations with Frank and with Tamara, and Caroline Lewis has been on the calls, and some of you. Where, you know, what would it be like if we had a creative brief for the Climate Literacy Network? You know, what would a campaign be if it was to the masses? So this is just an experiment because I did it all my own without a committee, and you definitely want to have people in the room brainstorming. So I tried, what is the single most important objective of our communication? Well, I tried, for example, that we agree that we are affecting our climate negatively. Now, we can go back and revisit this. I'm just using this as an example. And there will be a discussion. Who is our most important audience? Now, this is a question to ask ourselves, which we ask ourselves a lot at these clean tech and clean energy conferences. Do we really want to bother with the uneducated non-believers and the creationists, or do we want to go strengthen the intellectuals and the thought leaders in the press to go and convert people who are more, you know, we could call them apathies, you can call them early adopters, there's all kinds of names for people that are most likely to take on a cause. So I thought, just for fun, let's take on choice B. And I have written a lot of things about this that I can provide at some point. So if we chose B, let's just choose uneducated, non-believers, creationists, and the anti-scientists. What's the most important benefit to these people? Well, I was hard-pressed to find something about why these people would want to believe in. And I thought long and hard, what would be their benefit? Well, how about that they're smarter than their friends? And we talked a lot, it was a couple of years ago, and I've been on this call at least 2 years, about what's your CQ, what's your climate IQ, and your climate, your intelligence quotient around climate. And so I just kind of got on to that. Well, maybe a benefit was that you're smarter than your friends. So when you're out talking about, or you're writing, or you're addressing your congregation, if you're a priest or a minister or a rabbi, you want to sound smart. So I thought that might be one benefit. Why should they believe this? And then I wrote this. Well, because now we can trace pollutants to their source, which is something we were talking about before, about that Frank that was involved in, too, about weather bug. And there, now there's some science where you can actually trace it to the rubber factory in Tijuana. So I know I've switched over to the word pollutants rather than climate change, because I think that that's a more direct hit with people, and I think it also has to do with health. So that's why I said we can now trace pollutants to their source. This is just an example. What's the biggest obstacle? Well, we have media power out there saying otherwise. We don't really have them saying you can't trace it to the source, but we could. The guilt and negativity of that, not really wanting to feel bad every time you jump in your car, having to change your lifestyle, and then this is what I added, why I did version 2, is, which was really important, God has the answer. So what's our most important message? Well, I started thinking maybe it would be something like whodunit, because you always need, when you do a campaign, if you want a campaign that's really going to resonate and be one of those big hits, like, I worked on Apple 1984, I thought about something that would have a, always has the bad guy, and it has some tension. So I just started thinking about, well, what if it was a whodunit campaign? And everybody gets active about if we can trace the pollutants, let's do it. Let's start to really illustrate where the pollution's coming from. And so what do we want the audience to do? Well, this is our next question. I don't know. We talked about that last time. I don't know what we want them to do. We want them to fight against fossil fuel subsidies. Do we want them to simply spread the word, which is a little bit of milquetoast? Do we want them to reduce their emissions? Do we want them to consume consciously, or do we want them to become whistleblowers? Now, I was kind of leaning toward E because it's just more dramatic. And so how will we know if our message worked? And I'm now to the end of this. I don't know. How are we going to know? Would it be by polling people to see if they believe that we're affecting our climate? Would it be how many people go to a website? How many people, become whistleblowers? Whatever. So that's pretty much my entire presentation. But it's a way of disciplining ourselves to try to keep get to the end of the message, because without a creative brief, I've found in my life that people just get into sort of a tailspin, and sometimes it doesn't get anywhere until you get it down onto one piece of paper that everybody agrees upon.
So, Martha, I have a question. This is Tamara. So in the creative brief and in the examples of other products and even in this, you narrowed it to one audience, and I think one of the things we struggle with in this is that there's so many important audiences. Do you need multiple creative briefs to address each of these audiences?
Yep.
I think you
good
need
question.
To pick your most important audience. I do believe that you have to pick an audience because, you know, for instance, with Cheerios, they're really talking to the moms. I mean, the secondary years are the kids, but they talk to the moms and they have to decide. You know, I think you do have to make decisions like that. You have to make hard and fast decisions when you're trying to really do a campaign.
But it seems to me that in this kind of an issue, it seems to me that you need to work multiple audiences, and maybe you have a different creative brief and a different group or something. It is something I struggle with, is how do you, because I don't know that you can say that any one group, any one audience that we might define would be one that would be a game changer. It seems that there are multiple audiences that kind of have to work in concert. And I don't know if that
well, I think you look at how many, what you want. I think you go back down to what does the Climate Literacy Network want to happen? And if what you want to happen is get more people on the team, on the side of believing in climate change, then you go to the non-believers. And then what you do is you feed that campaign. Like, for instance, let's say we had a whodunit campaign or some kind of a campaign. Well, then you can feed the campaign to the thought leaders and to the press, and they would exponentially spread the campaign, but it might be more exciting and more edgy to go straight after the non-believers.
Yeah, but I've gotten the sense that that's a losing proposition, is that it doesn't matter
right.
how much you say. They're always going to – they're always, I mean, there's – it's not nothing that you can do to change their minds.
Yeah, and I think that goes to slides 41 and 42 in the biggest obstacle, and that relates to the post from Joe Henderson the other day of it's an existential crisis. I think climate deniers tend to see accepting climate change as something that will lead to a cascade of their worldview falling apart. I sometimes refer to accepting climate change as being a gateway drug for socialism in the views of a large part of the people, the audience that rejects climate change. And so that's different than convincing a young mom to buy Cheerios.
Well, we could do a chart and have a chart that's a spectrum chart and find the sweet spot in the spectrum chart if we do decide to do a creative brief together. And the spectrum chart might be people that are the early adopters, you know, most likely to change their mind.
Yeah, it may be worthwhile. It seems to me that a lot of these various pieces of the creative brief for a range of audiences would be similar. And so you could potentially start with a matrix where you have a different audience and address each of the questions for that creative brief for that audience and see if there's some synergy between them that you could put together so that you can ultimately address multiple audiences with a single campaign. I don't know if that's ever been done before, or whether there's something I'm missing that would work.
Well, I think
you guys
help
me out.
I think we need.
Okay, excuse me.
I'm sorry. There, I would like to bring out part of the threads that happened on some of the Climate Literacy Network communications. And I'm sorry, I can't remember who it was that made this comment, but it was talking about the Six Americas and those different audiences, and that if we go for the total non-believers, that's kind of the losing battle end, but if we went for some of the others, they might bring us up. Someone was looking at a 10% figure of where, you know, where could we get down, get it down to where there's 10%. We can accept 10% failure, you know, and still get our objectives. So if we can target our energies toward getting that critical mass that we need in order to affect the responses to climate change. And what I hear Tamara moving us toward is something like the Princeton studies, that here's 10 different ways, here of pieces of the pie that we can approach climate change that would make a difference. So how do we translate those actions to those different audiences to bring about the change we would like?
Well, maybe you go down to that, if you just drop off the 10%, which I totally agree with, it was kind of a decision that we made at that air day in Aspen last summer with Ted Turner and everybody. They were going to have debates with non-believers, and everybody just canceled the debate. They didn't want to give them a voice. They didn't really want to give them any attention whatsoever. So I agree with you. So where in the spectrum do we want to go? You know, I think maybe, you know, there's a possibility that we're maybe looking at if 10% is the non-believers, then, you know, going up from a certain percentage of people over that up to maybe 50%. So then you've got 40% you can deal with. But if you don't want to campaign just to the true believers, although they're going to be great message carriers. I mean, once you get a campaign, they're going to deliver them for you, because true believers are evangelists and thought leaders. They like to talk and they like to spread the news. So it's not like you don't hit them. It's just you've given them.
Maybe the group to go after is the disengaged, and because they.
Yeah.
What about your? To find the group that I mean, it's just that they don't really know. And try to move them from disengaged to concerned.
Right.
Marta, is there any realistic hope in targeting a campaign to, as you say, perhaps the true believers, perhaps some other group, I don't know who it is, but with the campaign emphasis being how to bridge the gap between the extremes in the country and trying to address the question of how do we all start talking to each other again? And having a message about that.
Interesting.
Finding common ground.
Campaign. Well, more, less common ground, and more. How can you talk to people who, you know, are way off in left field somewhere? And I agree with the get rid of the 10% business who are, you know, hopeless. Way out, but Marta, when you presented your sequence and decided to go after the non-believers who, and you said like creationists, anti-scientists, I thought you were going to go to quoting scripture about stewards of the earth kinds of things, and so be smarter than your friends really jolted me.
That's a nice idea.
And said, you know, that's a much more creative approach than just quoting scripture.
Well, the scriptures is a really nice idea.
This whole idea of what is the message, what is the twist, the trigger that you can use in communicating, I think is a perfect opening for, you know, are you tired of this divisiveness? How can you talk to people and get them to think more creatively about things that we have in common and ways that we can, well, which goes back to the common ground question, but how can you broach a subject with them?
Well, you know, I think if we were to finalize the creative brief together, the way that it works in a big agency, and the stakes are very high because the agencies have to succeed, or like if you don't sell Cheerios, you're fired. You know, like a couple hundred people are on the street. So, I think that if we were to pick, clarify and finalize a creative brief, which meant, you know, you're going to have to leave some people out of the mix of the audience. You do have to leave some people out. That's the whole point. And I think then you do three campaign ideas, which we could do together. And one might be the scripture campaign, one might be the whodunit whistleblower campaign, and one might be, another campaign. And then you have three campaigns. And then as a CLN network, we'd vote on which campaign we like the best and try to roll it out and have it be something that doesn't cost money. I mean, I think basically once you've got the message, there are ways to roll it out that, you know, if we're smart about it, we don't have to spend, you start kind of feeding it to Andy Revkin and you start feeding it to everybody, and you just hope that all your friends in high places start to distribute it. Mm-hmm. If it's, you know, and then you hope that it's really good. It has to be a really good campaign. It has to be kind of edgy. It has to be something that 10 seconds, it grabs somebody in 10 seconds.
Maybe another avenue to, because I'm still kind of stuck on that it's really going to be hard to focus in on one audience, is potentially we could have different groups who are engaged with different kinds of communities create a brief for their community and then share them on the Climate Literacy Network, and then we could sort of think about which one has the biggest bang for the buck in terms of you know, all of us contributing to it and moving it forward.
Yeah, I mean, your creative brief could say, I mean, and they really have to be targeted. They can't, I mean, that's why I did such a simplistic approach, because let's just say that you live in Cleveland and your target audience is the Girl Scouts or the League of Conservation Voters or something. That's even better. The more you narrow it down, the better.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
yeah,
so
no,
I
understand
that. It's a nice idea, but that's a pretty big undertaking.
Yeah.
But you could just pick one audience and test it, too. Mm-hmm. You know, one thing that we did to get the White House and the Senate, the Capitol Hill, to recycle, because they weren't recycling when we took the campaign on, was we created this mass campaign. We had a really funny headline. We had these a print ad that we all developed called Recycle Congress. And if Congress won't recycle, recycle Congress. And we sent we sent out a PDF file to every single person we knew and every single a massive email where everybody downloaded it, printed them out, went to Capitol Hill, and stuck them all over the place. And within about three, in the OP, they were sticking them on the garbage out back. They were sticking everywhere, and people were putting them everywhere. And guess what? It's like about 5 days before there was recycle bins. So you can do those kind of mass campaigns if you have something that's kind of creative and it's not real wordy and it's a little bit alarming. And then everybody can go print them out and go hang them up in their local PTA meetings or whatever. Mm-hmm. You know, I just kind of like the whistleblower one for some reason, because if we were to support Weatherbug and we were able to start casing pollutants in our communities, then I think we should blow the whistle. Because what do we really want to do? We want to really reduce emissions, I think. But I don't know if that's what Climate Literacy Network is real objective is. It seems as though it's just to raise your intelligence level, which is, that's a tough proposition because it's a little bit, you know.
I think it's hard in general to have individual. I mean, I know that people can make individual efforts to decrease their emissions, But that I also think that it'll be hard to get a lot of people to buy into that enough to make a difference. But so I question as to whether that is kind of the thing, in terms of the what do we want people to do. I'm not sure that that would be the top one. I kind of like would like companies to reduce their emissions.
Well, that's what I mean. I mean, I don't think we've already proven since the 70s that people aren't willing to give up their SUVs.
Mm-hmm.
You know, until there's an alternative that's cheaper. I mean, there's a lot mm-hmm. of research to show people they're just not. If somebody offered them the SUV at the same price and it wasn't lower emissions, they would buy it, but they're not going to choose it and pay more.
Yeah.
So
maybe instead of saying you want people to reduce their emissions, maybe what you want them to do is to use more renewable energy sources.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say. If you have a coal-burning power plant in Bourne, Massachusetts, and you can show with this weather bug some really interesting visuals, you know, maybe people would storm the coal-burning power plant.
Mm-hmm.
And then that would get on the news, and then people would say, "Well, yeah, we know that's a pollutant. Now let's start to support all the renewable energy programs in the state of Massachusetts or out on the Cape and Islands
mm-hmm.
that are receiving energy from that power plant." That's one way to do a campaign. I mean, it could be a lot of fun, but you have to have a way for the people to have something to. You'd have to drive them to action. And that's why I got so excited about the weather bug. I mean, I didn't really know until the last year or so that they could actually trace the pollutant molecules to where they come from. I just thought that was really exciting news that just never made it to the headlines.
So, Martha, in the time that you've done these creative briefs, how is it done? Is it the people sitting around in a room face to face, or can it be done asynchronously, or is that possible, or is it really take a rapid fire exchange of people sitting around together and sort of brainstorming?
I think you can have people sitting around together. The way that ad agencies are organized, because there's a lot of money involved because you're selling Cheerios. usually have a really chief strategist who's really works up the creatives. They work up a strategy, and from the strategy, a creative brief is drawn. So it can be one or it can be a few people that are clever strategists, or you can do it
mm-hmm.
as a group, which takes longer. But you do have to get it down to these one-liners. I know that for a fact.
Yeah. I'm
no,
thinking about the impact of change.org societally and how some of these things go viral. And it's a generation where those kinds of things can happen with the right message.
At change.org, if you hand them a campaign, they'd probably redistribute it.
Mm-hmm.
I had Bill McGibbons on the news because I videotaped him at Rio Plus 20 doing a sit-in, and that got distributed. I put it up on YouTube, and then I tagged it on SlideShare, and that got around.
Mm-hmm.
But that's kind of talking to the preaching to the choir a little bit. Unless you were to give all the change.org members or people on the list something to go do. To get it out more to the masses. I mean, we kind of started this by talking about the masses.
Mm-hmm.
Martha, this is Scott Carley here. I'm curious how you distribute the creative brief. I'm actually going back to slide 29, which I think is what you suggested was how you might present it. It's almost like a chart. And is that kind of a normal way that people present it? Because it might be quite interesting for us to try to do something like that has, all the answers to each of those questions in the creative brief, and then it creates an interesting way of at least presenting all of that at once. So is that how it's
done? You mean I put it all on one page there to show, it's usually a one-page or two-page document because a creative brief, actually also has the media distribution, it has deadlines, it has who's the team, and
sure.
what the budget is and all that. So usually the second page is those details. You know, are there existing logos? Is there a color scheme? You know.
Sure. But you could actually create a single page that sort of answers those questions, at least what the group sort of view of it. And that's something that could be then communicated for somebody to somebody else for discussion or whatever. You see it doing that? Because I'm not sure, you know, where we are as a network, whether we're sort of the folks to actually implement a campaign. But I think we are in a place where we could, you know, provide this kind of stimulus for groups to do those kind of campaigns, just like change.org. So.
Yeah, that's true. If we had agreed on a brief, which I did make a fictitious brief starting on page 31, I just didn't put it all on one page.
Mm-hmm.
Those are the same numbers. I think it was number one through seven. I left out the media distribution. I was trying to really keep it simple. So it was
good.
One answer questions 1 through 7.
Well, what I find
we could try to work one up.
Yeah, and find it sort of an interesting visual way to even present it as a way to communicate it to folks.
I mean, maybe it's not what the CLN's role is to do a campaign at all. I just was on a few calls where everyone sounded interested, and I don't know if it's really the role of CLN or not, because thinking.
Yeah, this is Tamara. Unfortunately, for some reason, my line dropped, so I was out of the call for a few minutes here, but I don't know whether we. You know, I don't know what the discussion was about, whether or not we would do a campaign, but I think the idea around creating even multiple creative briefs, just sort of to get people on the same page in terms of how to think about messaging, is probably a good idea. How we might move forward with it, I don't really know at this point, but I do think that we've been struggling for a while in terms of how we can best have common kind of messages, and maybe that's what we base our creation of a creative brief around. Is what do we want to try to move forward?
Mm-hmm.
I mean,
one thing is, even if all the CLN members had talking points. I mean, this is a different. That's a PR strategy, but. You know, what I've done with some companies is I make sure the company, all the employees have talking points. If they're at a cocktail party and somebody says, what do? They go, we make anti-lock brakes for Toyota that outperform any other.
Yeah.
Or something so that everybody,
So you're saying that having talking points is different from a creative brief?
Well, I think for PR, usually you want to have talking points. So if you said to if everybody in CLN had like about 5 things they could say, if you go to the AGU conference or you're somewhere and somebody says, oh, tomorrow, what's the CLN do? And you could say, we advocate for increased, intelligence around climate change or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
And then the next person, they come up to me and they say it, and I say, we advocate for increased intelligence around climate change. And then Scott says it, and everybody says that. Then it really helps a lot with PR. Everybody's saying, it may sound boring and redundant, but it really, really helps for everybody to say almost the exact same thing. You can word it a little bit differently. But, that's a really nice way for CLN to do get their PR straightened out. It's a little bit of a different angle on things. PR is different, but a lot of times we do that in companies. For instance, if we were to say everybody's going to go around and you could kind of cross them over, you could say, all right, everybody is going to say, we can now trace pollutants to their source.
Mm-hmm.
I'm at the RETEC and somebody asked me to speak. Well, we can now trace pollutants to their source. And everybody says that. So pretty soon, now we can trace pollutants to their source. And you've got one thing that you've just repeated at least for 3 months.
Mm-hmm.
And then you've accomplished something.
Mm-hmm.
Actually, it might be interesting because I think that a lot of our members find different value in the Climate Literacy Network. We could potentially put together a survey which asks the simple questions of what do they think the Climate Literacy Network is, what do they think it does, what do they think it can do, or what do they think it should do. And it would be interesting to, I mean, we could potentially take that and sort of put together a set of talking points that at least is the perspective of most of the members.
Mm-hmm. That would be a good idea for the network. I've even gotten myself stumbling about it when I have to leave someplace and get on the call
right.
at 1 o'clock. They go, what's the CLN? And I start name dropping. I go, well, it's NOAA and NASA. And
well, you know, it's
well, I don't have
because I go ahead.
No, I was just saying I don't really have even my own talking points down for CLN, but I think it's a good idea.
Yeah, well, one of the things that I've discovered over time is that there is a group of people that call in regularly, and then there's a group of people that read the listserv and find that very engaging. Some people lurk, and some people contribute. I mean, I think there's over like 350 people on the listserv.
Mm-hmm.
And what I found is that there's some people who know my name and they've never said a word either in email or on the phone. So that I don't know their name, but they're part of the Climate Literacy Network. So so it'd be interesting to get that range of perspectives.
And I'm wondering if in that same survey it might be good to ask just one question about your primary audience so that we have a feel of the kinds of people that they interact with, do education with, try to reach.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, that would be a good suggestion. I like that suggestion too.
Well, that exercise
I really
that I said about the 10 seconds at the beginning, I mean, maybe that's, you know, what 10 seconds is usually in a radio spot, 10 seconds is about two lines of copy. It's about 2.5 lines. It's 8 seconds. It's like about 4 seconds a line if you're on an 8, you know, in 12-point type on a, you know, 8.5 by 11 piece of paper.
Wow.
It's 4 seconds a line. So you got about 2.5 lines.
Mm-hmm.
Well, and that's part of why you need the repeat of the message, right?
Yeah. And we talked about, well, Caroline, I guess she's not on this call, but we talked about Caroline Lewis. We talked about how this whole campaign, which is another way to create buzz, it's a little bit off the topic. We talked about doing a competition among scientists to say what they do in 10 seconds and have a People's Choice Award, and everybody posts them on YouTube, and it becomes a contest for the best way to communicate what they do and who had the most relevant science. And it's kind of this idea I've had in the back of my head, but, you know, I was trying to take it to the... Yeah, I wanted to go to the Discovery Channel with it. I mean, maybe if we went... as the CLN to the Discovery Channel, they might find it interesting. It would be an online competition because they did that when I was in Durban at the Climate Talks in December last year. They had scientists get up on the stage and they had 10 seconds to say what they did, and everybody voted, you know. And it was amazing how few people could even explain what they did or whether what they did was interesting. You know, I've always wanted to do that.
Was it effective? Did people actually get messages out in 10 seconds, or was it just a demonstration of how difficult it is?
I think it was a discipline exercise for scientists. And I think some people were good at it, and some people were really bad at it. And some people just said there's no way in you know, they would ever be able to explain what they did in 10 seconds.
Mm-hmm.
But we can all explain what we do in 10 seconds. We have to, really.
Right. Well, that's what I think is fascinating about what you're talking to us about, Marta, is is how, if you really think about it, how crystal clear you can clarify what your message is. And I think doing this would be a wonderful exercise to both force us to come to grips with that and to build a stronger climate literacy network and to do our work better.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think maybe what I'll do is I had some ideas of some questions. I could put together a set of potential questions. It has to be short. If we're going to do a survey, it has to be
right.
Short to get people to really respond. And I can share that with the listserv to just get any feedback that anybody else who's been part of this conversation is on to the kind of questions that we would ask. And then we could put together a survey that we have members of the Climate Literacy Network respond to.
Mm-hmm.
And I might actually have a question in there, are you a member of the Climate Literacy Network, and actually send it out to the tri-agency list also.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
I can tell you that us having this call for 45 minutes is nothing because, like, for instance, Cheerios, when they decided that their message, which I'm assuming their message is, kids love Cheerios. Well, you can imagine that for about 4 weeks they said, no, Cheerios are healthier. And they got down to one. And I've done that with Stonyfield Farm. It's about taste. It's about health. It's about the planet. It's about taste. You know, and then we finally get down, you know, ultimately to health, you know, but we started with
mm-hmm.
taste. And I mean, ad agencies spend hundreds of thousands of dollars doing that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Well, that's
so
kind of where the Climate Literacy Network does come down. It comes down to health. So, you know, that's our consequences. It comes down to health.
Well, I agree with
or
that, actually.
Or well-being. I mean, or well-being. I mean, you can health
yeah.
is a major component of well-being, but well-being sort of broadens
it a little
bit.
Well, I think it can come right down to that, too, because but, you know, that's not climate change, that's pollution. And I've always felt like climate change derailed the pollution conversation, and it was unfortunate. But I shouldn't say that in this crowd.
Well, the whole business of CO2 being declared a pollutant and EPA being able to do that, you know, those have been issues that were busy getting hammered out. But certainly you can put the climate change piece in with other pollutants and their effects and all of that.
Yeah.
So. Yeah. What we're talking about,
I mean, people aren't really worrying
about
sea level rise.
Well-being of systems at all different scales.
Yeah, that's the issue. Global and long-term.
Well, I mean, if I think I'm going to get cancer because of the coal-burning power plant in Bourne, that would be enough to rattle my cage.
Mm-hmm.
I just don't think many people think about it. But am I going to worry about this Shell as BP, the cause of sea level rise? It's just a little more removed.
Right, and it's why Romney has been able to push the sea level rise absurdity, for better or for worse. There's a element of the public that says that's irrelevant whether the sea level rise.
Okay, well, we are at about the top of the hour. I want to thank Martha for making this presentation and getting us to thinking about this in a little bit more concrete way. You've provided us a mechanism by which we can kind of think about narrowing down what the message is. I will follow up and put together a series of potential questions for a survey and see if we can move that forward. And so with that, we'll end our call. Next week, I think we have informal discussion. Is that right, Scott?
Yes. That's right.
Okay. So very good. And then the following week, we have Walt Meyer talking about sea ice. As everybody knows, maybe every, I don't know if everybody knows, but in the past, 2007 was the minimum sea ice extent ever recorded until a couple of weeks ago. 2012 exceeded that in being a minimum, and we're still reducing, and that occurs into mid-September. So hopefully by then we will know the answer. And so that's September 25th. Okay,
nice.
So thank you very much.
Thank you, Martha.
Okay, thank you.
Yes, thank
bye.
You,
Martha. Bye, everybody.
Bye.
Thanks, all.